Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, we're going to be talking about documentation that you need in order to put together creative financing. This is Jeff's idea. Jeff, tell us why this is important, number one, and then we'll talk about what you want to go over.
I think that newer and intermediate investors actually get a little concerned, overwhelmed when they think about how do I try to put all the paperwork together, because they think it's going to be really in depth. And what I want to do is show you that it's not. I'll show you what I do. You can do it on a REPSI that's approved in your area. You can do it on your state REPSI. You can maybe we could even put a blank form like this on our website that people could use. It doesn't matter to me. And then I'll even tell you what I use as far as an addendum and a disclosure. But it's simple. It really is. You're not going to be the one writing up the trust deed and note or the contract for deed. And yes, there are some variables depending on if you did it subject to or seller carryback subordination. Obviously, the differences between land contract for deed, wrap mortgage, all inclusive, all of that stuff. But for the most part, it's going to be very similar.
Okay.
So you haven't done any of these that you've written up, have you, Jonathan?
Any of these?
Writing up a creative financing contract.
No.
Okay. So I use a pretty standard, and I've been using this since 2000. That's the same contract, although I've added a couple of extra points as they kind of come about. But it's, as you can see, it's 2.5 pages, right?
Yeah.
And actually, if you did it legal size, it would be front and back. So, yeah, it literally could be a one pager.
Okay.
Okay? I just don't like legal. And I'm going to just describe it real briefly, okay? So, on the top of it is where the seller goes, the buyer goes, the address.
Yeah.
And then there's a box where you're going to put what the purchase price is, what the earnest money is, what the down payment may be, and then what the note is, and if the note's going to the seller, if it's coming from a bank, or you know, whatever.
Okay.
It's pretty self-explanatory. Then you've got a separate section where it's going to ask about the financing. So what I always like to do, and it's funny, I'm looking at this and it wasn't done on it. I like to put in whatever terms I can put in the blanks. And then I like to say, see addendum, because I'm going to outline everything. I don't want there to be any
questions.
Yeah, I don't want there to be any confusion, nothing. Okay?
Okay.
Then the next two sections are about closing costs. Who's going to pay what? Okay? Very standard stuff. Number five is like just standard purchase agreement stuff. Number six is interesting. It's tax prorations. So sometimes you're going to cross out the tax proration paragraph. So if there's an underlying mortgage and the taxes and insurance are escrowed, I don't want there to be any tax prorations at the closing, because if we're basically paying the taxes through that escrow, then there doesn't need to be any kind of proration. They'll just get paid in November or however, whenever the escrow pays the taxes, and then that way they're getting paid then.
Right.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
Number 7 is about how long it's going to take us to pull title. So I always just put in a number and check a box. 8's about a survey, whether we want one or not. 99% of the time it's no for us. 9 is, again, standard stuff about wood destroying organisms. 10's about when we're going to close. Most of the time it's 30 days after acceptance or sooner. 11 is standard stuff. 12 is I add a paragraph in as is. No warranties expressed or implied. 13 is whether the property is vacant or if it's rented. And 14 is what things are included with the property. So I want the appliances. I always state that. If there was something else, if you're going on appointments, you may see that, hey, it's a good sized lot and they've got a riding lawnmower in the garage. You may want that. I've asked for all kinds of stuff, but I don't go to a lot of the appointments anymore. So now it's pretty much standard. I bought a house with 2 cars, a boat, furnishings, everything. I mean,
you asked for all of that?
Yeah, I did. Yep. So, number 15 is about default. You won't do anything there. 16 is zoning and restrictions. So is it a single family? Is it a multifamily? Is it commercial? So when I'm going through this, most of them are, other than the first 1 and 2, are basic, like check marks and write one thing in. Once you put in all the numbers and if there's creative financing involved, you just put in some of the terms. Everything else, I mean, you're seeing this, right, Jonathan?
It's yep.
Check marks, a number, not much, right?
Yeah, pretty simple.
17 is if you're giving them a certain time that they have to respond by. 18 is, again, we want to refer back to our addendum.
Yeah.
Okay. 19 is nothing. You don't have to worry about it. 20. 20 is something that I've added to a purchase agreement, and I'm really happy that I did. And I'll just read it so that you understand it. Seller agrees to allow buyer to place a notice of interest on the property until closing. This will protect buyer's position in the property. If buyer does not buy the property, then buyer will remove the notice of interest at buyer's expense. Okay? You can't go put notice of interest on people's properties without letting them know that you might.
Yeah.
So you should have that, whether it's in this purchase agreement or your own.
Right.
Okay? There are no agreements. You know, and then the last one is about what state you're working within, and then signature page. Now, there is an assignability clause. I'm sure it's in here somewhere. I just didn't see it right away. But I'll tell you, it's there, but I'm going to reference it at least 2 more times.
Okay.
Okay? So then I put together an addendum. Okay? This is my addendum. I created it. It's nothing special.
Okay.
Can you attest to that, Jonathan? It says addendum, and it lists a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Okay? So I didn't. It's not a form. You could use a form. You could use the state kinds of addendums. This is my addendum. That's what I use.
Okay.
Okay? Simple. And then a disclosure. It says disclosures, and it lists, what, 5 things?
Yep.
And it's got somewhere to sign it.
Okay.
Okay. Is anything looking super complex here?
No, absolutely not.
All right, so this was, we just talked about a deal last episode where the ones that I made some mistakes on, but we created terms, and then we are creating new terms to a new buyer.
Yeah.
This is the same purchase agreement, okay? So really, all I need to do is fill out my normal purchase agreement. And the major places that I need to pay attention to are what the numbers are. So what's the earnest money? What's the down payment? What's the note amount? What's the purchase price?
Right.
Okay. And fairly simple here, right? I mean, they all have to add up to the purchase price.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to make sure that I fill in the financing portion of it. So if I was, in this case, I was doing contract for deed, so I wrote that in.
Okay.
I put in an interest rate.
Uh-huh.
I put in a monthly payment per month for 36 months.
Okay.
Then it says privilege of prepayment. So what that means is that do I want to have the right to pay this off early?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I almost all the time I do.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe something's upside down and you need enough time to get it right side up and you don't want to get paid off early, then you would put in that it does not apply, that they don't have the right to prepay. The loan will be either due on sale or not due on sale. So we've talked about the due on sale clause a number of times before.
Yes.
But it's always on underlying mortgages, not on notes that we're creating.
Right.
So if I'm selling a property to you on terms, do I want to give you the right to go sell it to someone else on terms?
No.
At least not without my permission.
Right.
Right? So I'm going to have a due on sale clause in the note, just like the bank would, just like anyone else would, so that if you do transfer it and I don't like that you have, I can call the loan due and you got to pay me off.
Right.
So then you see the closing costs. And so when we wholesale and we do cash, pretty much we pay all the closing costs. That's kind of standard in this particular case. If we're taking over existing debt, like subject to someone that's behind on payments, we're probably going to pay their closing costs. They're probably getting, you know, a small amount of money, and it doesn't make sense to give them $2,000 if they got to pay $2,000 in closing costs.
Right.
But when we do typically creative finance on someone just like that deal that we were talking about, we're going to split the closing costs like traditionally. So the seller paid for a title policy for us. The seller pays some satisfaction and recording fees. And you'll notice there were no tax prorations because they're escrowed. So I saved him some money there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he'd have some more closing costs to pay. And us, the buyer, we pay some recording fees. I told you, I think our closing costs were like $500 total.
Yeah, as a buyer, yeah.
Yeah. So not a whole lot.
Yeah.
And he probably paid like $1,500, $1,800, something like that.
Okay.
Okay? And if you live in a state where there's transfer tax, you absolutely want to pass that on to the seller because that can start to add up really quickly.
Yeah, like 2% or something.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the purchase agreement. I mean, was that difficult at all? I mean, if you're writing purchase agreements for cash, I mean, it's not a whole lot different.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the addendum. And I'm not telling you I'm an expert at this. I made this up. It's worked. It's worked in three different states. I don't, unless someone tells me it doesn't work, I'm just going to keep using it because it's simple for me.
Okay.
Okay? Do you have to do it this way?
No.
Absolutely not.
You can create your own.
So here's what it says, okay? And it says, addendum one, okay? I wrote this.
Okay.
And it just has things that I want in this purchase agreement. So the first one is subject to inspection of the property. Most of the time, we haven't seen the property prior to writing this contract. This is one of my outs.
Okay? Yeah.
In this case, it absolutely is because I haven't seen the property.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I usually list where I wanted to close. Okay. And if I'm doing contract for deed, we talk Jack's Petty and one of our previous. He's the one that handles contract for deed. We close at his
First
title
Liberty,
company.
Which is First Liberty.
Right. And, you know, if I was doing all-inclusive, well, a number of other title companies could help me. I can decide where. So it may say I'm closing here or my preference. Okay? Buyer's preference.
Yeah.
I'd like to remain in control of the title company if at all possible.
Yeah.
So then I stayed again, even though it was in the purchase agreement, when I'm going to close. Closing to occur within 30 days or sooner from accepted agreement.
Right.
That means that if I've sent you the agreement and you've sat on it for 10 days, that my closing date starts when you sign it.
Right.
Okay. Due diligence deadline. That means I don't care what it's for. I don't care if it's about, I don't know where the money's coming from. I don't know if I found a buyer. I don't know an inspection. It doesn't matter. Due diligence, where my money, if I'm putting up any earnest money, is fully refundable. Due diligence deadline to last 20 days from accepted contract.
Okay.
Or 30 days or 15 days or whatever it is that you want. And I would also write in earnest money is fully refundable during due diligence period.
Okay.
Okay. Contract is fully assignable. If you have any intention of assigning this contract, make it clear.
Okay. Okay.
It's in my contract. It's in my addendum now.
Okay.
Seller will give buyer reasonable access to the property during the due diligence period. So not only do I want to get in, but I may have prospective buyers that need to get in and see the property. I want to be clear that you're going to work with us to get through there.
Yeah.
In this case, this was a creative financing. Seller will provide buyer with the most recent copy of mortgage statement.
Okay.
I want that. You could add a couple of others. Seller will give online access to buyer prior to closing. Seller will sign a limited power of attorney. Now, I knew I was going to get all this. It wasn't necessary to put it in, but put it in. If there's a question, put it in. Okay. Then I said seller is agreeing to sell the property on contract for deed with the following terms. Purchase price. And then the number. Down payment, the number. Term, and the number. Interest rate, and amortized over 30 years, 25 years, 10 years, interest only, simple interest, whatever the case may be, specify.
Right.
Monthly payment, principal and interest. Balloon payment, okay? So if this goes to the term, this is what it will be. Remember, I don't want there to be any
question.
So if it goes this way, at the very least, if someone wanted to cash this out early and they didn't quite figure out what I did, they could probably figure out based on, because I have the balloon payment right here.
Yep, and how many months it's been.
Right. Buyer begin to make payments 30 days after closing, or 60, or immediately, or whatever it is that you agree upon.
Okay.
Buyer will pay property taxes and insurance. This is in addition to the principal and interest payment of whatever. Okay. Now, sometimes I leave out insurance because if the insurance is escrowed in the payment, okay, I want the seller to keep paying that. And in reality, I'm paying for it because typically we've wrapped around that and I'm paying them extra.
Yeah, but you don't want that to go away.
But I'm going
to
go get a separate insurance policy, or my buyer should be going to get a separate insurance policy.
Right.
Buyer will be responsible for all maintenance and repairs. So these are almost identical to the stuff that I put in my LOI when I've submitted an offer. Now I've made it clear in my purchase agreement.
Right.
Okay. People are going to sign this. We're going to be clear what the terms are going to be. Plus, this is perfect for my title company or my attorney to write up the trust deed and note with all the terms.
Yeah, okay? Real easy.
And then I have a disclosure page. Okay.
So tell us why you do this and why it's important.
So the disclosure page is, I don't want to get myself into trouble. Wholesaling right now is, and we've had several episodes about this, that wholesaling is changing all across the country to some degree.
Yeah.
And so you got to protect yourself. And the more that you disclose, the less likely you're going to have issues. It does not take away all the issues.
Right.
But it helps prevent some issues.
Yeah, very good point.
So I'll tell you what my five things are. So seller owner has been made aware that one or more of the managing members of Jupiter Property Solutions is a licensed real estate agent in the state of Utah, but will not be receiving any type of commission on the property, nor is representing seller in any way. So my partner is licensed. I've got to make that clear.
Yep.
And I want
to disclose it.
Yep. So that's our disclosure. You're not licensed. You don't need it.
Yeah.
Seller owner has been made aware that the buyer is not an attorney, is not offered any legal advice of any kind. We haven't. But sometimes you start educating, and sometimes those lines get blurred.
Right.
Be clear. I probably should just put in another one that, hey, I haven't offered any tax advice either. I'm not a CPA.
Right.
It wouldn't hurt. Buyer may assign this contract to another entity or individual. How many times have I said this now?
Three.
Okay. If you claim that you didn't know, you just didn't read this.
Yeah.
Buyer is a real estate investor and purchase properties for quick sales, buy and hold, and buy and fix. Okay. And buyer is a for-profit company. So I'm going to make money, and I'm going to do it in a number of different ways. If that's a problem, then we should talk about it before you sign this.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's my purchase agreement. Okay. That's what I put together for a creative financing deal. And then I take it to my attorney or my title company, whatever the case may be. And I have them pull title. I send them the purchase agreement. And then they write up the contract for deed or the all-inclusive. If it was subject to, they're writing up the deed. If it were a lease option even, I've even worked out with Jax that if I was to do a lease option, I've passed all the paperwork by him. I'm like, look this over, make sure it's all legal. It's a rental agreement with an option agreement. And I said, I want you to close these. He's like, there's no closing. There's no title. And I said, I understand that. But I'll pay you $600 or $500 or whatever it's going to be to close these because I want both my seller and my buyer to know this is like a legal closing done with an attorney. So you think you're going to get away with something, you better know that an attorney is going to be involved.
Okay.
And he's like, you're going to pay me $600? And I'm like, no. The seller's going to pay you $300 and the buyer's going to pay you $300 and I'm going to pay you none and it's going to take you 15 minutes. So do you have a problem with it? And he's like, no, I love that. So,
that's good.
But that's it. Okay. Was that super complicated?
No.
It's actually very easy. I would tell you that there's a couple of places where, it'll take a little practice to make sure you know what boxes to check and what to put in. But it's that addendum, which is nothing more than just explaining what you want. If there was going to be like a substitution of collateral clause, it'd probably be in this addendum and I'd spell it out of what it would be. If there was, anything like that, I would just put in the addendum, and I want to be as specific as possible.
Yeah.
That's the paperwork.
Yeah. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. So it's something that people find to be really overwhelming really isn't.
Yeah.
And I get it. Anytime that you're like, oh, it's a contract, and what if I fill it out wrong? It's like, if you fill it out wrong, someone's probably going to catch it and tell you so you can go fix it. And if not, then go pass it by an attorney once or twice. And if your attorney works for the title company, they're going to do it for free.
Yeah.
And then you'll have it down. I've dealt with attorneys. I probably do more contract stuff than I should just because I'm not an attorney, but I've been around them long enough to know for the most part that, hey, these are the kinds of things that I want. And I'm always thinking, where could this go wrong? What could happen? How do we protect ourselves?
Right. And the whole reason why we're going over this, guys, is just so that the contract or the addendum or the disclosure does not become the obstacle that holds you back from doing creative financing, because it is simplified. It's easy to find contracts online. I mean, these documents are everywhere. We would always advise you to get one from your attorney, your real estate attorney.
You should absolutely make sure that it's usable, legal in your particular area.
Yeah. So, Jeff, I got a couple questions
sure.
on that.
Please.
On your addendum, do you ever get flack from your prospective seller on the due diligence period?
Okay, so our due diligence period is typically 21 days to 30 days. 21 days even for a cash offer. 30 days if I've got to go find an owner-occupant buyer. On occasion, people's like, why do you need so much time? And I'm like, so, and we're going to do an episode with this because, and we've done one before, but I just think it's so important. When a seller asks me, like, they either ask me a question or they're objecting to something that I've put down, rather than just give them an answer, let's get to what the issue is. So if someone asks you, Jonathan, do you really need 30 days? I'm like, is 30 days too long? Is there something else you had in mind? Rather than try to give them an answer. Like, and usually the answer would be, oh, I could do 20 days. Or I could do 10 days.
Yeah.
It's stop giving answers. Start asking questions.
Okay.
So, yes, every once in a while people ask about our due diligence period, and hopefully we're asking questions about that. But in reality, I mean, sometimes we just put some properties under contract in Texas, okay? I've never done anything in Texas before. The purchase price is $2.4 million. And in my LOI, I said, I need 30 days due diligence, a 10-day close, 40 days total. That's pretty quick. The realtor, there's a realtor involved, said, I can't believe that he agreed to 30 days due diligence. Usually it's 2 weeks or less. And I said, for a $2.4 million, eight different separate properties?
Typically 60 days.
I think this is super quick. And,
yeah. Anything commercial is typically 60,
days. It's odd to me. So I would tell you that sometimes I'm willing to negotiate that. Sometimes I'm not. And if that would have been a deal killer for this, I would not have agreed to 2 weeks. I need 30 days.
Yeah.
So, yes, it comes up. But I would tell you, ask questions about why it's coming up rather than just giving answers.
Okay. So the same question to, do you get questions from the seller about assigning the contract? Or the assignability as it's stated in your addendum?
Almost never. And that might be because of how we deal with the seller prior. Remember, this is the purchase agreement. So we've dealt with whatever things need to be dealt with prior to getting to this point. So we have an LOI, a letter of intent that we send with our offers, and some of it spells out some different things. But so first of all, if it's a cash deal, most of the time we don't talk to the seller about it being assignable. If it's an owner financing deal, we have talked to the seller, because if it's something where we've got to go find the buyer, they need to know that. We need some time to go do it. If it's going to be that we're going to sell it to another investor, I mean, they have the right to know who they're making a loan to, basically.
Yeah.
So we're either going to be the buyer, or we have a very large network of investors we work with. It's either going to be us or one of them.
Yeah.
That's how I state it. And if they're fine with that, then I told them it's going to be one, or it's either going to be us or them. So if it's them, I've got to assign them the contract.
Yeah.
Cash, I don't worry about it, because it doesn't really matter where the cash comes from. But I can tell you, like on that Texas deal, I absolutely had to make that assignable. That has to be. And I just told them, it's either going to be, we have a number of partners, we have a huge network of investors that we work with. It's either going to be, we're going to do them together, or they're going to do them, they're going to fund them. It could be any combination thereof. It could be individually, it could be for the whole thing. I don't know. That has to be in there. And right. If it wasn't going to be in there, that's a deal killer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially with your exit strategy on that one.
Yep.
For sure. Okay, what about, so last question on that addendum and stating that you're going to record a notice of interest on the property. Do you ever get
any flack? That's not in the addendum. That's in the purchase agreement.
Oh, in the purchase.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever get any flack on that from sellers saying?
Rarely. I mean, we've probably maybe twice since we put it in there. And my response would be is in the past, we've had some unscrupulous sellers that we've dealt with where we've actually put stuff under contract and they've contracted to sell the property to multiple people. I don't want that to be a problem. You're trusting me to do what I say I'm going to do, and I'm trusting you to do what you're going to do. I don't think that you're one of those people, but I also didn't think they were either.
Yeah.
So this is just going to protect us, and it's not going to hurt you in the least bit.
Yeah. So one thing that I have in my contract is I have a clause that says, seller gives buyer permission to market equitable interest in the property and gives buyer permission to record a notice of interest evidencing this purchase agreement.
Yep.
So I know if I like to have that clause in there if I'm going to wholesale the property. So
the buyer, it's not going to, at least in the state of Utah, it's not going to protect you.
No.
I think, again, it's a great, it's part of that disclosure process, you know, to try to lessen the issues that you could be dealing with. But it doesn't make wholesaling legal in the state of Utah. And probably, I know people believe this, it is just not true. There was this myth that people were able to get away with for many years. That meant if you signed a contract, you got what's called equitable interest. And once you had equitable interest, you could go do basically whatever you want. That is just not true. And you can debate that with me. And I would refer you to a bunch of attorneys, including Jeff Watson, who is the head attorney for the National REIA Association. And equitable interest does not give you the right to market a property. And what the issue really is, and I don't want to get too much into legalities, is that you as an unlicensed investor is basically acting as a broker. Marketable, equitable interest or not, you are taking something from a seller that you don't have a license to do, and you're putting it together with a buyer that you don't have a license to do. You're acting as a broker.
Right.
So as much as you put that in there, and I used to put, hey, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to market the contract, and I can tell you based on the rules that are going on currently, right now, and they ever changing, always,
yeah.
Always. It does not matter.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's something I didn't know.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. Okay. And it always comes down to, are you marketing the contract or are you marketing the property?
Actually, right? It doesn't even come down to that right now. In Utah, if you are unlicensed, you're not even allowed to market the contract. So, now, granted, it's different all over the country, but it's happening to some degree everywhere. It's going to, like in Florida, I can tell you that if you are doing, you're allowed to assign a contract. That's allowed. What you're not allowed to do in the state of Utah right now is that you're not allowed to go and say you're a cash buyer and you're going to buy this property and then at some point you're going to decide, I don't want to buy it. I'm going to assign it, and I'm going to assign it for a profit. You actually have to disclose that now to the seller. You have to say, I'm no longer the cash buyer. I'm now going to assign this property to someone else, and I'm going to disclose to you how much money I'm going to make by doing so. And at any point in time until you disclose that amount, they can walk away. So that's what the Division of Real Estate rules are right now in the state of Utah. Will they be that 3 months from now, 6 months from now? Probably not.
Okay. So when you guys are assigning a property to another investor, are you disclosing that to the seller?
No, I'm not. But if you wanted to follow all of the rules to a T, that's what you would do. You are not allowed right now as an unlicensed person. If you're licensed, you can actually wholesale. But there's all kinds of rules. Really, the way that they've described, if you're unlicensed, you are not allowed to wholesale at all. None. So they will not recognize that you are acting as a broker, and that is not allowed.
Wow.
Yeah. But again, this is Utah, not all over.
Yeah.
But I can tell you in Florida, it is a felony to act as a broker without a license. So trying to wholesale without a license. So you better know what the rules are before you get involved. And I don't care that the Division of Real Estate here would not care that you said, hey, I'm going to be totally upfront. I'm going to market your property. I'm going to go find a buyer. I'm going to make a profit. If you're unlicensed, doesn't matter. Does not matter.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Not many people do.
Is this new? Is this brand new?
Within the last 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe I just haven't been up to date.
Yeah.
Well, this is super good information.
Sorry we got a little off topic.
No, right? This is good. I've learned some things I didn't even know. Yeah, I guess because it's just so recent. It's been so recent.
Yeah.
I haven't talked with Jeff Braylio on you know, the outcome.
Actually, Jeff had, he did a couple of presentations, one live, one webinar, where he went over, you know, he was the liaison between investors and the Division of Real Estate, was trying to lobby for investors. This is what came out of it.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, cool. In any case, guys, don't let these things be an obstacle.
No, you got to find... real estate is about adapting. And I can tell you that, first of all, wholesaling's been going on for many, many years. Owner finance, creative finance has been going on. I've been doing it personally since 1999. And it was around long before me.
Yeah.
So some of this is that, you know, well, we don't like this or we don't do that. All right. So does that mean that I can't do it, or does that mean I've got to adapt and figure out a way to do it?
Absolutely.
And what you do need to know is what the risks are, what the potential consequences are, and decide how you want to deal with them.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen things like were very prevalent years ago that aren't as prevalent now. I mean, there used to be simultaneous closings, and there used to be land trusts a lot. At least in the state of Utah, land trusts aren't used much anymore because they were used in different ways during the crash, and now people have had to adapt.
Yeah.
So there's always ways to adapt. Start networking with other investors. People start coming up with ideas, but make sure you know what you're getting yourself into, because you don't want to do anything that'll be illegal, unethical, get you into trouble.
For sure, for sure. All right, guys. Well, that wraps up this episode. You guys can reach us at our hotline if you have any questions, or if you you want to leave us a comment, or if you want to run a deal by us, or if you want Jeff to structure something at no cost to you, absolutely free. Leave a comment on our hotline or run the deal by us, and we'll potentially put that on the show and have him show us how to structure creative financing around that. Anyway, so that number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. You can also catch us on the web at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Again, thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Until next time, guys, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.